I'd love to come in because I want to put some good magic on TV. Yeah. Plus, Chris was a fantastic guy. I mean, always talking about the people that were around him, how he couldn't do any of this with without the people that were around him, talking about his family, a good family man. And I just thought it would be nice to do something with somebody, you know, who was like that. It was a good person. And so as a result, I ended up working on the first season of Mind Freak. And it was supposed to be, I think, like 7 episodes, and ended up being close to 21 episodes, if I'm not mistaken. Hmm.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. For those of you who have followed this podcast for some time, you have heard Banachek with me on many occasions as we chatted with other guests, attended magic conventions together, and other assorted podcasts. But due to his busy travel schedule and other performance, lecture, and consulting obligations, we haven't sat down to catch up for quite some time. I have received some emails and comments on our Facebook page for the Magic Word Podcast saying that you would like to hear more from Banachek. So, in early November, during one of those rare times when he was home here in Houston, we met at Denny's Restaurant. I use the term restaurant loosely here, where we talk about many things. Most notably, on Halloween, Chris Angel announced the formation of a new touring group called The Supernaturalists. This will feature some of the performers who filled in for Chris at the Luxor Casino in the Magic Jam earlier this year. Banachek will be one of the performers who will have a variety spot starting in June 2015 at Foxwood Resort and Casino in Connecticut. In our chat, we cover a lot of ground, including his work with Chris Angel, James, the Amazing Randy, the College Circuit, television consulting, and much more. Well, you don't want to hear me. I know. You want to hear more cowbell. More Banachek. So here he is on The Magic Word.
Hello, this is Scott Wells with the MagicWordPodcast.com, and today I have a guest that we haven't talked with in a while, at least that you guys haven't heard his voice. It's Banachek. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, good to be here, bud.
And with you as well again. We talk from time to time, but never really, you know, turn on the microphone over here. It's been a while because you've been just doing a whole heck of a lot of traveling around the world. Just got back from Spain.
Yeah, back from Spain. I think it was like 27 dates, and it was like 4 or 5 hours driving a day.
Oh, my gosh.
Sometimes I'd have a lecture, you know, in the afternoon and have a late evening show. You know, like I'd be in Madrid, get down at midnight, have a six-hour drive to be able to get to the next place to do a 1 o'clock lecture. Yep. And then do an evening lecture that evening as well. So it was just a crazy, crazy schedule.
And you usually get overseas to Europe to do a lecture tour each year. I mean, 1 year was Germany and then Italy or France.
Yeah,
and this year
done,
was Spain.
I've done France. Not done Italy yet. I wouldn't mind doing Italy. But, yeah, I did do France, completely around France twice. Yep, I was in Germany, and I think we had like 21, 22 dates there, and yep. Then just did Spain. And every year I try to go somewhere overseas. Usually take the wife with me. We'll do a few lectures, a few shows. We'll go to
That's
Australia, South Africa, or, you know, yep. England, wherever it may be. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Speaking of South Africa, I know that you've been involved with the group down there, the College of Magic.
Yep. One of my favorite charities,
Craig Mitchell,
yep.
And
Craig
those
Mitchell
guys.
And those guys. Yeah,
talk about that briefly.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite charities actually, and I call it a charity, but it's so much more than that. They take kids from the ghetto areas. When I talk about ghetto areas, most people don't even realize this. But they still have areas out there that are almost like it used to be when it was segregated. You've got people that live in these little tiny tin huts, and the hut may be, you know, 4x3, you know, or something like that.
Wow.
It's basically a room for sleeping. And you
it's
may
like
have
a refrigerator
people,
box.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And there are little kids that live in these places as well. Hmm. And there's no future for these kids. And so what they do is they get sponsors, and then they bring these kids out from these ghetto areas. They get to come into the city. They get to go into a beautiful building to the point to where they come to the restroom the first day, and they can't get them out because they've never seen flushing water, so they keep flushing the toilets. They've never seen faucets that you turn on
running
and turn
water,
off.
Yeah.
They've never seen mirrors that you can actually see your face completely in there. So that's all magic to them. But they start teaching these kids magic, and they teach them about life, and they teach them biology, and they teach them about optical illusions. And if they get really good, these kids get to go and travel overseas and go to different conventions. So mm-hmm. It's really a fantastic cause. And I always tell people, if you have any extra magic or any extra props, send them over there. Just, you know, send it to them. Those kids can use it. The school can use it. But even better than that, sponsor one of the kids. I think it's around $300 to sponsor a kid, which is nothing.
Right.
And considering what these kids get as a result, it's a fantastic cause.
That'd be like a year's salary, like,
yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
For some over there.
Well, it'd be a lot more than a year's salary for some over there, yeah.
And Craig Mitchell has been the one that's been involved with that. I know that David Berglis is another one who is believes in the charity as well.
Yep, and Siegfried, yeah.
Yeah, and so if somebody wanted to get hold of them, is there a website or something?
You can go look for the College of Magic. I don't know the website offhand right now because I didn't expect to get the question, but yeah. It's really easy to find. I mean, it's basically it's one of my bookmarks, so that's probably why I don't know.
I'll try and put a link on the on the blog as well. Well, I want to talk with you about the Supernaturalist. Now, this is something that's just been recently announced that Chris Angel had said that...
Just a few days ago, Halloween.
Exactly. Yeah. It was on Halloween that he was announcing that this is going to be coming up, and it's something that is not in competition with the illusionist. I mean,
not at
that
all.
It's a completely different kind of a setup, more of a Cirque du Soleil type of a thing. So, tell me a little bit about.
And it's got a bit more variety in it as well. I mean, there's a dog act, there's other magic, there's all types of things in there as well. So, you know, we did Magic Jam, and this is a little bit like Magic Jam, except that Magic Jam was a show that was put together within just a few weeks, and it was thrown together and then put on the stage where Chris Angel performed. Now, we worked intensely
in
Las Vegas. We worked intensely on that show. This is going to be a touring show, and we're going to have probably 8 to 12 weeks of rehearsals. It's going to go to the Foxwoods and the casino.
Foxwood Resort Casino in Connecticut.
It's going to be in Connecticut. And it's there's going to be 3 weeks there. At that point, the show should be put together very well, and it should be a fine-tuned machine. But it's still a chance for us within those 3 weeks right there to refine it even further. You're always finding new things and things that you can change as well.
Just like you were with the Magic Jam, I assume that kind of got tighter every night?
It got tighter every night, and by the very end, I mean, it was a well-running machine at that point. It was a shame that it wasn't a shame that Chris had to come back and work, of course, but it's a shame that that show didn't continue in some other form there. This is going to be bigger and better. Chris has been, he's got a 60,000 square foot warehouse. And he's got all kinds of machines that can build things and make things. So he has the capacity to make magic like no other magician does. And so he can refine things and work things out of that warehouse. And he's continually doing that. He's doing that right now as we speak. So there's going to be illusions in that show that people have never seen before. He's got top acts from all around the world. You're not going to see anything like this anywhere else.
Yeah, he talks about this kind of being a little bit different and kind of being more like Cirque du Soleil. Is the Cirque going to be involved with this? I mean, what's his name? Dragoon? Or
No. This is not a Cirque show.
It's just going to be like
a Chris Angel.
Okay, so actually, I guess the better quote says that his goal is to redefine magic touring like Cirque du Soleil did for the circus. Okay, so it's not going to be a Cirque show. It's like redefining magic
this
as Cirque
du Soleil. This is going to be
Cirque
du Soleil did with circuses. This
gotcha.
Is going to be... Chris is going to be doing that with the magic. I mean, he's got Brett Daniels. You know Brett Daniels.
Yep. He used to come to Magic Island, which is kind of funny when you stop and think about the grand illusion and the backdrops and all the huge things he did, here in Houston to do a show. But, yeah,
he used to bring in a huge show in a very small venue.
That kind of
gives you an idea of who Brett Daniels is. I mean, two-time Entertainer of the Year. He's starred in almost every network magic special that's been out there. That's been a variety special.
You know, I'm not gay, but he is a handsome man, too. I must say, he has that jaw structure.
That's all, Scott.
But he is a handsome man and has those piercing eyes. And the point is that his stage persona is something that comes off the stage that people can feel out in the audience. You know what I mean? That he just has a commanding presence.
Yeah, and the great thing about Brett is he's put other touring magic shows together.
Yeah.
So he knows this business inside and out. And Brett has said himself that this show is bigger and better than anything he's ever done before.
Wow, he's done a lot of shows.
So, including some touring ones that are out there right now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then there's Constantino, and Constantino is from Australia. And Constantino is sort of like the Chris Angel of Australia.
Hmm.
He travels all over that area out there from Singapore, Australia, and then he's well known over there. He's the best magician there. And Chris was able to get him to come over here. Now, Constantino had thought himself, he said, you know what, I'm not going to go to America yet. Because it's a one-time deal, he had thought in his mind. It's a one-time deal. When you get here, you have to do it right. And he didn't feel that he was right for America yet, despite everything else he had done, until he talked to Chris, and he realized that Chris does things right. And so Constantino said, yep, I'll come on over. And he's excited about being a part of this.
You know, that's a good point. Just to touch on this for a moment, you had mentioned about the Magic Jam, and, well, Chris was out for a while. But the show, originally, when that opened in Vegas, was not well reviewed, nor well received, particularly among
the
musicians.
The show was well reviewed.
Well, it wasn't until later.
No,
Magic Jam. Sorry, talking about the original when Chris first started with his show,
Believe Show. Yeah, yes.
That it did not get a lot of really good reviews. However, as I understand it, and I think you had told me then, Vanacek, that he had changed this himself, and it wasn't until they started listening to his ideas when Chris actually was able to inject.
Look, Chris
his
had a vision.
Philosophy and
his vision. Cirque had a vision.
Exactly.
And the two didn't always meet.
Right.
And
until,
it's a Cirque show.
Right.
So, you know, bottom line is, Cirque sort of had the final say in the end, and in the end they started realizing Chris knows this business better than anybody else.
Exactly.
And once they stepped back and started letting Chris do his thing, you've seen the show.
Yeah, I have.
And you know what? You need to see it from the time that you saw it before even, see it now.
Oh, really?
Even gotten better.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's even better.
I went with you to see a while back.
And so it's kind of funny to me when I hear people make comments about Chris's show, and half of them have never even seen it to make these comments.
Yeah.
And then the other ones saw it in the very early days, and they haven't seen the show because it's a completely different show now.
Yeah. Well, as we were saying earlier, just with the Magic Jam, for the few weeks as you're on there, of how tight that was towards the end of being a well-oiled machine, with him doing that so many times a night and thousands of performances, you can imagine, you know, plus...
Chris has gotten really good at doing this, and that was the great thing about Magic Jam. He had a vision, he understood it, and he was able to, you know, with the lighting, with the theatrics of things, he's got a very good eye for those things, and that's what the touring show is going to be. It's going to be an incredible, it's going to be eye candy.
Yeah, who else is on the bill?
We have a street magician from Spain, and if you know anything about Spain, you know that their close-up guys are fantastic.
Oh my gosh,
This is Adrian Vega, and Adrian is just a fantastic close-up artist. You're going to see some of the best close-up that you've ever seen in any show whatsoever, even in single shows. We have Kristen. Kristen's going to be back. And Kristen was doing, I'm not sure what she's going to be doing in this show yet because we're all rehearsing separately and it's not going to be until next June anyway.
Yeah.
But Kristen, in the Magic Jam, she was doing some of Chris Ames' illusions when he was not there. So, and I was impressed. I mean, she stepped up to the plate, and a lot of people made fun of her up front before they saw anything. A lot of people said it was going to be awful. And then the magicians that did get to see her just realized how fantastic Kristen really is, especially when she's under the tutelage of Chris.
Right. And that's a good point, too, that it's under the tutelage of Chris because that he's a good magician and able to act as a good teacher. And just to kind of put to rest some of the rumors that I have heard about them being boyfriend and girlfriend, that they're really not romantically inclined.
I don't know why people think this. I think just because it's Chris Angel that he's going to... I don't know what they think, but I know Kristen well, and Kristen works with me on the Million Dollar Challenge as well.
Yeah.
And not even close. They're not boyfriend and girlfriend. They're just very good friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to put that to rest because I know that people, I've heard that, and they keep asking me, and keep saying no.
She's a fantastic magician.
And
right now she's working on a bird act, too. So.
And she deserves everything that she's got because of her abilities, because that she's a beautiful
lady. You know what? She's
lady.
A hard worker. Yeah. And this is, again, it's mostly magicians that will give, you know, Kristen a hard time. That don't know Kristen and don't know her background, don't know where she came from, and they look at video clips of when she was just a little kid, and my God, when you take a look at those video clips and you realize how old she is, she was doing a fantastic job for that age.
Oh my gosh,
but a lot of people want to look at that and go, okay, this is who she is? No, Kristen has grown. Boy, has she grown.
Yeah. So, who else? Second Christmas.
There's Johnny. Johnny is he's basically a dog whisperer, so there's going to be a dog act in the show, so there's a little
a dog
peek
whisperer.
In there. Yeah, okay. I can't tell you too much about that just yet. So,
okay.
It's a dog act.
Well, you know, it's interesting about how popular dog acts were because America's Got Talent, I believe it was last year, or maybe it was the year before, that a dog act won. And I thought, wow, you know, that how can you make a full evening show out of a dog act, you know, in Vegas or something? But apparently must be popular enough, you know, to have won America's Got Talent. But
it is, but this is not a full evening dog act show. This is a part of a show. So
just a variety.
It adds a lot of variety to it. Oh, and Chris Angel will be coming in from time to time as well.
Oh, so he's not going to be
surprised
in every show.
He cannot be in every show because he's still doing
his obligation to Luxor.
This is one of the hardest working people you'll ever meet. I mean, he will be flying in on his days off from Cirque to do shows with us while we're on the road.
Supernaturals.
Yeah. Hmm. So you know, you may get to see him, you may not get to see him. So, but the show is going to stand on its own with or without Chris.
Right. Anybody else?
We may have some surprises. I can't say too much just yet. So that's it.
Right. Well, since it's just been announced, I know they're going to be announcing other dates incrementally.
Yes.
You know, this was just something, again, on October 31st that Chris had announced that they're going to be doing the Supernaturalists with the intent, I assume, of kind of touring the world again like the Illusionists are doing with Jeff Hobson and Kevin James and all those guys.
Yeah, this is a Chris Angel production. He knows where he wants to take it. He knows what he wants to do with it. I can't say too much about it just yet.
It's his vision.
But there are some big things planned. I mean, this is not going to be a one-time, you know, quick thing.
It's interesting because again, their first show over there that's going to be at Foxwood is going to be for 3 weeks. So
yes.
I'm assuming that that's not just like a one-off kind of a thing. So if they're going to be moving to other venues, it'd be a similar kind of a thing. Whereas the Illusionists can kind of, you know, move in and out and be, you know, here for one or two days, and then, you know, let's say in Houston, then in Dallas the next couple of days. Whereas it sounds like this is going to be a much larger show.
This show is going to be a huge show, but it will be able to, it will move.
I understand.
It can do two nighters, three nighters, one nighters. I would hope, at least, that we're going to be in a town longer than one or two nights, because that's the thing that kills me right now, you know, doing the college tours. Like I said, I was in Spain, you know, 27 different cities with 4 or 5 hours driving, sometimes 6 hours driving a day, and it just kills me doing that.
We're getting older, man. I mean, it used to be that you would sleep in the van and you'd drive.
I would drive as far as I could, get a few hours nap, get a truck stop, take a shower, go do a show, and then drive to the next one. So not even any time to check into a hotel.
Yeah, and a lot of times I remember that you were going in, like, in the afternoons and doing kind of a promo thing at the student unions and then doing the
teaser and then do a teaser. Sometimes I would go in, I would do a Noonan, I would drive to the next city, I would do a quick teaser, and then I would do a show that evening. Mm-hmm. I would get in my van, and then I would drive all night to about 3 o'clock in the morning, get up at about 6 in the morning, eat some breakfast, go off, drive, and then do another show. And it was continuous. I mean, it was grueling, really, really grueling. You know, this has been an interesting month for me because it just seems like a lot of things have come together all at once, and it just happened that way.
Well, you have to first start with a lot of balls in the air to see what's going to come
down.
Well,
that's true. You know, and sometimes they all come down. You know, we got the Supernaturalists, which has just been announced, which I didn't expect it to be announced, you know, on Halloween, but it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had 2 nights ago on BBC, the Randy documentary, which I'm a major part of, and I'll be going down to Key West coming up. And performing there at the film festival, but Randy's documentary came on, and it talks about Project Alpha, it talks about Peter Popoff, and I'm interviewed through the whole thing.
Right?
You can go to anhonestliar.com, that's anhonestliar.com, and you can find out more about that film there. You can even purchase the film as well if you want to.
What kind of a film? What was it about? Was it a documentary?
It's a documentary about Randy's life.
About his life, okay.
But it's so much more than that. In many ways, it's a love story. It's got a surprise twist. It's not just about Randy debunking, but it's about situation that Randy was placed in himself. Hmm. And I don't want to give too much away, because it's kind of like telling you the end of a movie.
Sure.
But people have said it's one of the most emotional documentaries on magic that they've ever seen.
Well, you know that Ricky Jay had one that came out just a couple years ago. I can't think of the name of it. It just escapes me right now. But it was a documentary about his life, and towards the end it showed kind of a more personal side of Ricky and his wife and his, you know, more of a loving relationship. And you know, you see the public side of him, but rarely get to see the private side. And this
you get
documentary
to see a very different side of Randy in this movie.
Yeah.
And a side almost that Randy didn't want to show at certain times while the movie was being made, but he agreed to let everything be shown, the warts and all, in the end.
Yeah.
And I think he's very happy that he did.
And honestliar.com.
And honestliar.com.
And so this is a film festival you said that's going to be coming up. Is it a film festival that's going to be featuring?
Well, it was basically premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival, and I was there for that.
In New York, yeah.
And now I'm going to be going down to Key West to the Key West Film Festival down there, and
it's
going to be shown there, and I'm going to perform at the end of the movie as well.
Okay.
Do about a 30
what are the dates?
Show.
When's that coming up?
This is coming up, I think it's on the 16th.
Oh, it's this month of November.
30th, I think. I head down there on the 12th. Ooh, I would have to go back and look.
That's fine. By the time
my days are so like, I can never remember where I am from one day to the next.
By the time of this broadcast, it's going to be past that day.
Yeah,
that's right.
Well, you may be able to catch, you know, right now it started to air. It's airing all over the world. And I think it just aired in Italy, Drummond Money Coutts, who's a magician out of England. The Money Party, put in his name, is sort of a play on words because he comes from the Coutts family, which is basically, you know, all the big COOTS.
Yes, okay.
And it's the banking, you know, they own a lot of banks over in Europe. And he's a very interesting guy, a very, very nice guy, a very knowledgeable guy, and a very good magician as well. And it's all about sort of like he's on a journey to find out about magic and to find out about the different forms of magic. And I'm interviewed about mentalism, and I perform a piece of mentalism on there as well.
So it's a documentary
It's
also?
A documentary, okay. Yeah. That won't be shown in the United States, unfortunately, because it was National Geo Europe. And so it's going to be shown all over Europe, and it's going to Budapest. It's going it's going everywhere. They gave me a list, and I think the list was like 25 or 26 different cities.
What's his first name again?
I mean, not cities, countries, sorry. Yeah.
His first name is what?
Drummond Money
Drummond
Koontz.
Drummond Money Koontz.
Yeah, keep an eye out for it.
Ah, interesting. Well, speaking of Randy and money and Million Dollar Challenge, tell me what's been up with that. And I know that that is something that has been keeping you busy, certainly. I mean, people are always contacting you and a couple times or more a week and saying, hey, I can make a ghost appear or
whatever.
We
talked about Kristen Lambert, and Kristen is actually helping me with that now.
Oh, good.
She handles all the applications that come in. I don't handle them anymore. There have been some changes made within the foundation itself. You know, DJ Grothy is no longer the president. Everything's moved up to Virginia, and that's just happened in the last couple of weeks. So I'm sort of playing catch up with that as well, since I've been out of the country, as to what's happening with the JREF at this particular moment. But there's some exciting changes.
JREF is James Randi
Research. Randi Educational Foundation. And you go to, you can go to jamesrandi.org. And the web, if you go there now, if you've been there before, you'll see the website's completely changed. It's a brand new, clean look.
And so, again, that she's working with that, and you're continuing to get more people who are coming in and saying, we want to apply for this $1 million.
I don't get to see as many of those as I used to.
Which is a good thing.
It's a good thing, but it was also, it was fun sometimes in some ways, because I get some really interesting ones. You know, I'd get a guy that says, hey, I can stop earthquakes before they happen. Well, how are you going to do that? Well, he says, I'm going to make a prediction of when an earthquake's going to happen. I said, whoa, let me stop you right there. Okay, so you're going to make it, you're going to predict when this earthquake's going to happen, that you're going to stop. Well, yeah, but let me finish, he said. I said, okay. He says, so then what you'll do is you'll get a genuine psychic to validate my prediction. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Let's say I got a genuine psychic. They would win the $1 million. But let's say they're a millionaire psychic and they don't care about the $1 million.
So there really is a genuine psychic
where
somewhere.
Where do we go from here? Okay. He says, well, I will predict the earthquake before it happens. Your psychic will validate my prediction. And then I will stop it 6 weeks before it happens. So basically, he was going to be stopping an earthquake that he was going to be predicting. And then everything happened in Haiti, and I never heard from him again.
So just a minute. I'm going to make a prediction right now that for the rest of this interview or chat, there will not be an elephant walking the front door of this building.
Okay.
If it does,
that's nice.
You know, then I lose the $1 million.
Does that include elephant costumes or somebody with the name of elephant
or an elephant?
You know how these things go. Yeah, could be a pin, a shirt with an elephant on it. You know, it could be a million things. There's your elephant. So I'm not going to take that bet because my luck, it would just so happen, or a guy would look like an elephant. You know.
Yeah. So with that, once a year that they do have the in Las Vegas, they have the Randi.
We have TAM, and every TAM so far.
What's TAM? What's the amazing
meeting, which is the Randi event that goes on.
That's open to the public. It's mainly skeptics,
it's
anonymous.
The public, I mean, you do have to pay a fee to attend it, of course, as most conventions.
Yep.
And it's a fan. I mean, we have scientists, we have physicists, we have geologists, we have, I mean, you name them, they come. You know, from Adam Savage to Bill Nye to, I mean, they're all there. You know, I mean, it's a fantastic event. It's an exciting event, and you always walk away with some fantastic knowledge and making some fantastic friends that you'll stay in touch with.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would recommend anybody that's into science, anybody that's into skepticism, that they attend at least one amazing meeting. I try to test a psychic there every year as well on the Sunday night. And so far, since I've been president, not president, boy, since I've been the director of the James Randi Challenge, I've tested somebody every year, and I hope to test somebody next year. Sometimes it happens at the very last minute, like the days before, two, 3 days before. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we get them 6 months ahead of time.
I remember seeing something, I think it was on YouTube, where they had an envelope or with a card in it or something, and they had to tell you what the card was that was in the envelope, and they got like one out of three
they
or something.
They had to find a specific card.
Yeah, had to find
with a pendulum, yeah.
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 What are the kinds of things that they had?
We had a guy that said that he could remote view from another country.
He could what?
He could remote view.
Oh, remote view. Okay.
So he could remote view what was going to be in a room. So we had to put 20 items together. And he would have pictures of all 20 items. And then one of those items would be randomly selected under blind controls, double blind, and placed inside of the room. and he would concentrate and tell us what the item was. He failed miserably. Mm. We had another one with the balance bracelets, you know, that all the athletes were wearing.
Yeah, you were on Good Morning America or somewhere.
I was on
network.
A show, one of the network shows.
Today Show or
that.
Something?
Yeah. And,
debunking that, yeah.
Debunking that. Yep.
So somebody actually came and said that this really works, and you were okay. You debunked that in public there. Okay.
Yeah. So you know, we get multiple claims that come in.
Yeah.
You know, of course, we can't test the weird ones, like the guy who says that his mustache curls every time he walks into a room and there's a ghost, because we can't find a ghost to test it. So
You know, on those bracelets, I was in Phoenix at a shopping mall, and of course, you know, guys are calling you over, you know, come see this or whatever. And he was trying to do that, and he was going to do this experiment, you know, with me, of course. And as you well know, of course, that they have you try to lift something first of all, and then the next time you do it with the bracelet on. I said, well, let me try it with the bracelet on first, and then take off the bracelet, and then try it the second time. You know, so, well.
You kind of threw him out of whack. And it's interesting because a lot of these guys don't realize what they're doing because it's just a very subtle movement. It's a change in degrees, very slight, and they don't even know what they're doing because they're just doing the same thing consistently. Also, when you do it the first time, you set up sort of a preconceived goal at that point of where you're supposed to be or what to expect at that moment.
Right. So the best way, if any of you are out there in a situation where that someone is trying to sell you one of those items, you might try that first of all and say, hey, you know, let me try it with the bracelet first and then the second time without that, so you don't set up that false expectation.
It could still work. If they know what they're doing, if they're doing it on purpose, they'll still be able to make it work.
Yeah, if there's a really good salesman, I guess, in that case.
It's interesting. They sell all kinds of things now. I remember years ago my daughter came and she had bought some vitamins from somebody because they used those same type of experiments to make her think that if you held the vitamins, that the vitamins were good for you. And if you weren't holding the vitamins, if you were just holding it.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like to my daughter, I said, really?
Yeah.
Really? You're going to ask me about that? You know, she said, well, Dad, how did it work? You know, because when I held the vitamins, I was stronger. And then when I wasn't holding the vitamins, I was weaker.
You know, I've told the story on the podcast before, but I think it's a funny one that Don Weiberg, a friend of mine in Chicago, and I were at a flea market one time, and he was using Barry Richardson's Haunted Key. It's a little gimmick that you wear, and there's ring and whatever. Okay. And so, and there was a lady selling crystals, you know, at the flea market. And he was saying, you know, these crystals have, you know, certain powers, I understand. And she said, oh, yeah. And she was going on about, you know, this one does this and this does that. And so he said, well, let me try this. And he put the key in his hand. And, of course, he held it over this crystal and it rotated. And he said, wow. He said, and the lady's looking at it and said, yeah, I'm supposed to do that.
Oh, that's what she said?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, of course. Yeah, it's no big deal.
Yeah, like she sees it every day.
Exactly. I mean, she didn't raise her eyes. It's like, yeah, that's what I'm supposed to do.
That's funny.
Yeah, very strange.
Well, she would do anything to sell it. That's why.
Well, there you go.
Exactly.
I'm sure that's true. Yeah, you need to take that home with you. So let me get back then to, briefly, I guess, you mentioned about the college circuit. That is still a very popular circuit, and a lot of guys are doing that and being very successful. I know that Mike Super, had been doing that for longer years than that, even after as far as he's been advanced with America's Got Talent and having won the next phenomenon. With $250 million or $250,000. Wow, that he was.
Yeah, we're both speaking out of turn today, aren't we?
That's right. Yeah,
it must be the coffee.
Yeah. So he was still actively performing all around, and a lot of guys do. And so you don't do that as much as you used to, though.
Probably do maybe 15 to 20 colleges a year now.
And mostly up in the Northeast, is that right?
It's a little everywhere.
I
would have to say the percentage, but like two-thirds of them are probably up there, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I head down to Florida a lot, too. Texas, I do some in Texas.
Okay, so you're flying in and out, but again, not doing the kinds of shows that you used to be on the road where you do like one after the other.
Yeah, no, I mean, it used to be every day. It was
throughout the whole school season.
I had 2 years where I did over 350 shows.
Holy moly.
And they weren't all colleges, you know. There were times where I'm in one area and I'm doing three shows a day for a month. But adding all the colleges and all the corporate work, it was well over 350 shows. Yeah.
And when you first started working with Chris Angel, that you really had to put that on hold for a while, and then the next season or two, you said, hey, look, I got this thing I want to do.
I was pretty burnt at that point doing colleges. So it was one of those things when everything happened with Chris Angel, it was a nice turn of events for me because it gave me a chance to make a change in my life and be in one place. And it was hard work. Yeah. And you work from morning to late at night, but at least I was sleeping in the same bed every night. At least my wife could come in and spend time with me.
Right.
I remember, you know, I would fly my wife in a couple of times every few months to wherever I was on the road so she could just spend some time with me.
We'll return to our chat with Banachek in just a moment. But first, since it's the holiday season, I want to take a minute to thank you for listening to The Magic Word. With over 200 podcasts in the archive and voices of hundreds of magicians with tens of thousands of downloads, I have had a great time visiting, learning, and recording these podcasts. And I appreciate your advice on how to improve this podcast, suggestions on topics and guests, and what I should do to move forward. And I particularly appreciate those who have donated to the Magic Word through PayPal. Some have asked if there is a way to make regular donations. Well, now there is. For as little as a dollar a month, you can now support the Magic Word on an ongoing basis. I have set up an account with Patreon.com, that's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, that will allow you to set a monthly amount to donate to my ongoing efforts to provide you with quality content on the Magic Word. You can support the Magic Word with any amount charged to your credit card or PayPal account. You can increase, stop, or adjust the amount at any time. For the cost of a cup of coffee each month, or a little more to pay for an adult beverage like a martini or a single malt scotch, you can become a much-needed patron of the Magic Word. Please visit my page at patreon.com/themagicword to see my video and learn more about how you can become a patron. Thanks for your time, consideration, and support. And now, back to Banachek.
And when I find out about how Chris first contacted you, I guess obviously there are a succession of events and things that kind of led up to it. You know, speaking of James Randi, going back to that, and then him mentioning it to Penn & Teller, and they came through Houston and to visit with you, and you shared the bullet catch with them, and that kind of. Right. So I'm sure that they probably, and then Johnny Thompson, you know, and then recommended you to Chris, I guess. So,
No.
How'd that come out, Chris?
Chris had heard about the bullet catch and knew that I had created it. Chris also wanted to do a Buried Alive, and he knew that I was the first one ever to do a successful Buried Alive, 6 feet on the ground, dig my way out. And he was interested in doing those. Now, I had heard of Chris Angel because I had seen his, I think it was called Supernatural, which is interesting because now we got the Supernaturalists. But Supernatural on Fox, I think it was called Supernatural.
Was that the one where he had the hooks in his back of the helicopter?
No, the one with the helicopter and hooks, that was Mind Freak. We did that on Mind Freak.
Okay.
But he did do a stunt in New York where he hung, I think it was like 24 or 48 hours for
a
hooks.
Window?
In a window, yeah. And he was really hanging from the hooks and that. So, but this was the one, first one where you actually saw him walk up and down a wall and a few other fences. Fantastic things. It was a very different look. It was very different than anything else that was on TV at that time. And I had seen it. And he was also making his own music as well. And next thing you know, I get some CDs of his music. And I request that he would like to meet with me. And so he flew me out to Las Vegas, picked me up in a limousine, brought me to the hotel. And we sat and we started talking about the bullet catch. We started talking about A Buried Alive. And of course, I couldn't give him the
bullet catch. Yeah, it's already...
The Penn & Teller bullet catch.
Proprietary. You know, yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't be right for me to do that.
Right.
But we talked about other methods. And we also talked about The Buried Alive. And then we started talking about other things. And as we're getting through the conversation, Chris said to me, he said, man, I need a guy like you. I don't have anybody like you.
Mm-hmm. You know, that has your depth of knowledge and creativity.
For those kind of things. Well, we already had Johnny Thompson. But, you know, Johnny's forgotten more magic than God. But, you know, I was up on a lot of the new things and, you know, how to work these things behind the scenes and how to do pre-show and just, you know, all the different things that he needed, all these elements he needed.
Right.
So, and at that point, because it was his first show and Chris had never done a TV show before, he had spent a lot of money on getting people to come in and talk with him. And he says, you know, there's not much left for this season, but, you know, they're all, you know, down the line, if we get another season, that, you know, I'd love to have you in as well. I said, you know what, not a big deal. I've already got my shows. If I can do the shows that I have right now, I won't take any more. I'd love to come in because I want to put some good magic on TV.
Yeah.
Plus, Chris was a fantastic guy. I mean, always talking about the people that were around him, how he couldn't do any of this with without the people that were around him, talking about his family, a good family man. And I just thought it would be nice to do something with somebody, you know, who was like that. It was a good person. And so as a result, I ended up working on the first season of Mind Freak. And it was supposed to be, I think, like 7 episodes, and ended up being close to 21 episodes, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm.
They threw that at us, like, after the first 3 episodes were delivered, that now we want all these other episodes.
Yeah.
So we have to sit in a room, brainstorm, and come up with all the other episodes as we're in the middle of shooting.
Sure.
So that was kind of crazy.
Who else was involved with that early on?
It was a guy by the name of Jacob Spinney. And a guy by the name of Dexter, really nice guy, Dexter, fantastic guy. Johnny Thompson and myself.
Hmm.
And, you know, later in the year, I brought in Luke Jamay to come help as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we did a pretty damn good job considering we didn't know what the hell we were doing that first year. And, John Farrow was there, who had been with Chris Angel for a long, long time, had done other TV shows with Chris Angel. And Chris is actually the technical director he builds all the sets. for America's Got Talent. So there's another. It's weird
wow,
how all
those
these.
Are beautiful
it's
too.
Weird how all these connections sort of come together.
Sure.
And it's just an interesting way of where people that I've been sort of associated with, but didn't realize I was associated with, I get associated with them in other ways. So
the more irons you have in the fire, the better off, because you never know which one's going to heat up next.
Yeah, no, you never do. Mm-hmm. You never do. You know, I always get the problem is you sometimes you get way too many irons, and they all come together at the same time, and you got to try to pick the one that you think is going to be the hottest.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to say no to some others, even though you've worked very hard to get them, just because they're all falling together at the same time. You try to separate them. You try to say, look, I can't do this, but maybe I can do that in a month or two. But sometimes people say, no, we can't do that. So you lose those.
Well, Chris was on with Mind Freak for what, 6 years? 5 years?
Yeah, six years. Seasons, yeah.
And then it moved over to Spike Network?
And then Spike with Viacom, yeah. You know, Viacom was extremely difficult to work with.
Yeah.
It was very different than Viacom. I mean, I've never... It was interesting working with A&E and then working with Viacom because... Viacom, there's so many legal hoops you got to jump through. My contracts were pages and pages and pages and pages long, and background checks and everything else. I remember when the one lady came to me and she says, "Banachek," she says, "you're one of the few people that can actually touch children." I'm like, "Excuse me, I don't want to touch children."
I don't want to, yeah.
Yeah. No, but you can. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I don't want to.
Yeah.
She says, no, but what I mean by that is because... you know, doing the background check on you and everything. And it was just like, if there was any little infraction, I guess that's why, you know, I'm squeaky clean is what it comes down to. But if you had a certain amount of driving tickets or any of these things, you couldn't, you know, handle kids or talk to kids. So it was me and a couple other people that could touch kids, you know. So,
yeah, you can kind of move them around, basically.
Yeah, communicate with them or work with the kids.
Exactly,
you know,
rather than pointing, you could actually put your hand on your shoulder or move them over to one place or the other like that.
Yeah.
And so Viacom only had you for the one season? Or?
We only did one season with Spike TV. It was an interesting, I don't want to say too much, but it was just a very interesting time.
Yeah. And so after that ended, they went back, and Chris really started devoting more time to working with the Luxor and his
show, Believe. Well, the Luxor show, we still have, Chris, you think I got fires. My God, you see the fires that Chris has. And Chris is not done with TV yet. You're going to see him on TV again.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I remember for a while he had his Christmas gift set, you know, the Chris Angel magic kits and everything.
Oh, yeah.
They were out there,
every time I go out to Vegas, he's still, you know, his fingers are in those, and he's got new magic sets coming out and new places that he's going to be selling them and promoting them. So yeah, Chris Angel is he's all over the place.
I just wondered if he was still doing more magic sets, or you know, if he just was done with that. Or?
No, he's doing more magic sets.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, as far as like working with Chris, that you're going to be continuing to do this new show on The Supernaturalist, then for a while with, and that can go on indefinitely, I guess. Just starting to be booked wherever around the world. Is it?
I mean, it could go on indefinitely. I don't think I would probably do it indefinitely. I mean, I'm 100% behind this. I mean, it's unlike any magic touring show that I think that anybody's ever seen.
Yeah.
And I'm excited and proud to be a part of it, but. You know, I'm Banachek, and, you know, there'll be a point where I want to do my own thing. And, you know, whether it's, you know, related with Chris or not related with Chris, I will continue to do my own thing. And I like to grow, and I like to change. And, I think you and I have talked about this before. There was a point in my life, especially when I was doing college, where I felt like I was getting really stagnant. I was doing the same show over and over and over, no time to rehearse and change the show or put new things in or do anything like that. And that kind of gets boring, and so I started to challenge myself and put myself in situations that I've never been in before, and doing things where I possibly could fail, and making myself be in situations where I was a little bit nervous to give myself a little bit of an edge.
Well, mentalism in general is kind of like that, I think. But to a degree, there are some things.
It is, but to me it's not, because I've been doing it so long. You know,
well,
in my early days, it was just, you know, I would never say no to anything. I could do anything. You say, can you do this? Oh, yeah, I can do that. And then I'd figure out a way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, then
well, like
you, start getting paid.
Yeah.
And then you start making money, and people start expecting you to do well and to do good.
Right.
It's just not quite as easy to make a mistake or do something that might possibly be bad, because now you have a reputation. When you have no reputation,
it's easier to walk the line. Yeah,
yeah,
and or the edge, I should say, where you could fail. But what I was talking about mentalism, you know, being different than magic from the standpoint that you could fail, because there are a lot of things that when you were trying to manipulate someone to be thinking of something or do something, particularly the subtle things that you do, that they may not react properly. And unless you have a direction where you can take them, you could fail. And if someone is not skilled in knowing what to do...
You see that a lot. You know, I wrote the book Psychological Subtleties 1, 2, and 3. And those were just meant to be subtleties, never meant to really be routines for people. They were tools for people to take and to add to their own toolbox so that they could enhance the effects they already performed. But quite often you see guys that will create entire effects based upon those tools and sell them in booklet form to people as a routine for people to actually perform. Missing the point completely that most of the majority of these things were things to enhance. They were things that if they worked, you made the most of it. If they didn't work, the audience didn't even know an effect happened.
Yeah.
But now you got people writing books, an entire routine. And if it doesn't work, you have failed.
Yeah.
And you're getting paid to perform. You're getting paid to succeed. When I perform my question and answer routine, I will often throw out information that I have no clue. It's just basically, you know, cold reading. It's just me throwing stuff out there and hoping that some of it hits the wall.
Yeah.
But I know that I've got all these facts that I know are 100% that are going to hit. So I can hit them with those at the end, and they forget the things that I failed at.
Yeah. Because if they have a dog that's named Spike, and you say, well, you have a German Shepherd dog or something, and I know it's a German Shepherd, you have so many other things that are going to be 100% correct that you don't have to worry about.
Yeah, you're thinking about a dog, aren't you? Yeah. And is this a dog? This is the first dog you ever had? No, it's not. It's a dog you have now. It's a dog you have now. The first dog you ever had, was that a bulldog? It wasn't a bulldog. Why am I getting... Oh, I'm getting that from somebody else. But this dog that you have...
Right, there you go.
Is a German Shepherd, isn't it? Yes. Mm-hmm. And you're wondering if I can tell you its name.
Yes.
The name of your dog, K, I'll mix all the letters up. Think of any letter in the word. You know, it's K, isn't it? Yes, you know, that kind of thing.
Right, so it's a hard consonant.
I play with it, you know, with Spike, but I've thrown out Bulldog as their first dog earlier. They completely forget that I made that mistake.
Because you're saying somebody else.
It must be somebody else then. You know, let's deal with your dog.
Yeah, Q&A is one of the hardest things to do. You know, I've talked to Bob Cassidy about this in detail. I know that you've lectured on this, and so has Bob and everything, you know, then as well. But I think that's interesting. Again, you have that duality of perception. That is, that when you're saying something to, like, okay, you're wanting to know if I can tell you the name of the dog. Well, she's written down the name of the dog, you know, to begin with. Whereas that to the audience, that they think it's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
That, you know, you wanted me
I've
to...
I've turned it into a challenge, basically.
Yes.
You know, it's like, you're wondering if I can tell you the name of your first son, aren't you? Yes. You know, whereas they've written down the name of my son is such and such, yeah.
So, yeah, they're perceiving it in a completely different way than the way that the rest of the audience is perceiving it.
You've got to be very careful with that. There's so much dual reality right now, and I talk about that even like with PK touches. I'm not going to go into it exactly, but PK touches is basically you tap one person, another person feels it.
Right.
When they go back into the audience and they talk to their friends, that dual reality all fits together. The question is, you know, he didn't touch me. Yes, he did. You know, no, I'm sorry. The question is, let me go back on that again. So they go back out into the audience, the person that felt these taps when I never touched them. You know, they go out into the audience and they say to their friends, they say, wait, he touched me. And they go, no, he never tapped you. No, but I felt him tap me. No, he never touched you. No, I felt him tap. He tapped me 2 times. I felt that. No, he never touched you. He was tapping the other guy all the time. So the dual reality all goes together. But there are other types of dual reality where when the person goes back out into the audience and they talk to their friends, and the friends say, well, how did he know that you were thinking of July the 30th? Oh, I wasn't thinking of July 30th. What do you mean? I was thinking of a boat. Well, wait. And then the dual reality starts to fall apart.
Yeah.
So you've got to be real careful with this dual reality thing. There's some fantastic effects, but you've got to be real, real careful that everything lines up when they go and speak to their friends. Otherwise, it all falls apart.
Yeah. I have tried the Q&A a time or two, you know, and something that's not going to be for a paid show. I mean, that's a hard thing for magicians or mentalists or performers in general to find opportunities where you could be bad.
It is.
You know, and to break in some new material.
I usually throw, you know, when I started with my Padfolio many, 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 many years ago, my psychic Padfolio, I carried it on stage for a long time, knowing what I wanted to do with it. I went through the motions of it. Not actually using it for the effect, but
just
to
get
comfortable with it, to play with it, to feel it. I'd walk through the motions of making the switch in my, you know, when nobody knew what I was doing, but it didn't look out of place. It didn't look like I was just pantomiming something on stage, of course. It just, before I actually ever used it. And I'll do a lot of things like that where I'll just get comfortable with something. I'll have something in my pocket and play with it while I'm doing a show. But it'll be in my pocket, knowing that I'm going to have to pull out a billet or knowing I'm going to have to make a switch. But I'll do it in my show without actually performing the effect itself. And then when I finally do perform an effect, I'll take an effect and I'll put it between two good effects. Mm-hmm. So that if it doesn't play quite right, at least I've got it buffered with a really good effect before it and a really good effect afterwards. So if worse comes to worse, I've got sort of a roller coaster ride going, which is what I want in my show anyway.
Sure.
I want ups and downs. I don't just want it up, 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 or a straight line going all across.
That's a good question, or a good point that I'd like to ask about ups and downs. I have thought about that before, and I thought, well, I really don't want it down. I'd rather have peaks and plateaus. In other words, that it's ever increasing, that it goes up and then it's like, oh, this is good, and it's a plateau, and then it goes up again, and then another plateau.
Well, it depends what you mean by that. Are you talking about the quality of the effect, the strength of the effect, or you're talking about where something's fast and exciting, and then there's something slower that goes, you know? So it's,
oh, that would go they're, down. They're, I see.
That's what
that's
I'm talking about.
Emotional release.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to give people time to absorb their emotions, and you've got to change those emotions as well. So if you've got them all excited and everything, I think there comes a point where now you can stop. You don't have any music, and it's just you, and you're quiet, and you slow the pace down, and it's one-on-one.
And that brings
it down. That may bring it down in one level, but in another way, that can even be stronger than when you were extremely excited.
That's a very good point. No, I was thinking about effects from one to the next, but I think that still an effect could be strong. But if you slow down your speech pattern or whatever it is, or if you're playing to music and suddenly you have some slower music, if you're doing a silent act, whatever it happens to be. So, yeah, you would have those where it kind of... I think you have to give the audience a chance to just breathe.
Yeah, you do. I think, that can be misinterpreted, too. Because if you watch me when I perform, I have something happening all the time. If somebody's coming up on stage, I'm talking. If there's always something happening, there's no dead spots. There's nothing worse than when I see a performer stand up and say, excuse me, would you come up on stage and you come up on stage? And then they just stand there and wait. And wait.
For the person to walk up.
For the person to walk up on stage. They have nothing to say. Or when performers, when they may be doing nail writing or something like that, and they'll say something like, now, is there any reason you chose that? And it's always, they're always saying that same thing. They haven't put any thought into, it's just basically a moment for them to pause to be able to write.
That's one of my pet peeves, and I do this myself, in which
I've
would
done
say,
it too.
Where you say, now what I'm going to do, or who I want you to do, or for my next effect, or something where you're trying to just keep the patter going, but it's better off to say nothing.
Yeah, well, you can do that with looks and things and stuff like that.
You've told me that before.
Or even stopping and moving some furniture around, moving a chair or something like that. That's you doing something. If you look at the audience, you look down, you pick up a chair, and you move it.
And so, in other words, like if you're asking someone to come up on the stage, if you stop talking and you walk over to get a chair or to kind of move it around or something, at least you're doing something to give the audience some visual clue that something is happening while this person's
walking. I'll usually have somebody coming up on stage, and then I'm talking to the audience while they're coming up. Mm-hmm. I have something to say while that person's making their way up on stage.
How'd the show go, by the way, last Saturday night? You had a big show at the college?
Yeah. Put a lot of different new music in there. We had a major issue with music just right before we went on. My computer all of a sudden started buzzing. And so we had to use a backup drive for that. But
you say your computer, what did you have? What kind of music were you using? What did you say on your computer?
I had MP3s, a bunch of different MP3s. I don't know what it was. It was coming through my speakers out into the system.
What kind of a sound system do you use?
I used it last minute.
What kind of a sound?
I was using their theater sound system.
Okay. I thought maybe that...
No.
You ever use like Carey Pollock's MP3 tech?
It's great. It's fantastic. I don't have one. I don't use it, no.
Okay. No. What do you normally use? You just have like a flash drive, I guess, with some music?
I have music programs that I actually have, and I just play it through those. So.
But do you cue the sound person saying, here's what I want to do, or do you control it yourself?
Everything's in there with cues for them to be able to play it. And that became the problem because in the program that I'm using, and I've used multiple different programs, but in the program that I'm using, it has cues for them being able to play the next one, everything else. But luckily, I had that all printed out as well.
Yeah.
So I had that printed on a printed piece of paper, and then we were just able to take the actual music itself and put it into a regular program that played music.
Gotcha.
And they used those cues.
Oh, that's good.
So it's not perfect, but it got us through.
Can you tell me what system that is that you use?
No, I mean,
lighting. For lighting cues.
For the show that I did there, there wasn't really much lighting cues. It's basically on and off and give me an audience.
I was going to say, most mentalists, yeah. I think, just have a straight wash. Yeah,
yeah. And this is a great thing about going back to Chris Angel's show is I actually, in Magic Jam, had the best lighting of any of the acts. Even Chris was like, why the F aren't I using this lighting? He says, I want this lighting in my Cirque show, you know, so because it was so fantastic.
Were they pin lights, spotlights, or laser lights?
It was an amazing thing of... You can see pictures of it if you go online. I think I might even have them on my Facebook. Of there's lights coming out, pin spots that come out from the bottom of the stage all the way up the stage.
Yeah.
Pin spots that are coming down. So I'm walking through this like array of a spot of pin spots.
Yeah.
And and then there's other lights that just sweep across the stage as well as I'm coming out. It was so big, and just so. It was like a magic effect in itself. Hmm. And I would walk out and I would have to laugh every time when I get up to the stage, because at that point I'm saying, now I want everybody here to think of a playing card. And it was just like going from this huge light in production all of a sudden to me talking to people just seemed like I would have to laugh at that moment.
Yeah. That brings me to a point I meant to ask earlier. That is the amount of minutes. How many minutes did you do in that Magic Jam? Was it like 12 minutes?
It got up to about 14 minutes by the time we were done towards the end.
That was three or four.
Started out in the beginning. I think it was close to 11 or 12 minutes when we started. And by the time I got done with the show, I was up to 14, 15 minutes.
And that was how many effects?
That was, oh boy, let's see, cards, Q&A, pretty much just three.
Just three.
Three effects, yeah.
And so in The Supernaturalist, how much time are you going to be given, you know?
I don't know. I have no clue right at this moment.
You're
it's probably going to be 15, it's going to be, we've got all these acts, so it's probably going to be about 15 minutes, I would think.
Okay.
That doesn't mean I'm not going to be helping out in other acts and doing other things in the show as well.
Will this be narrated? Will it have an MC?
That's boring. I mean, Chris is one for transitions and having really good transitions. Even with Magic Jam, he never wanted a show where he would just come out and say, okay, now my good friend Banachek, and always sort of a transition of where one act sort of went into the other act, and a lot of times it was a surprise how it happened. It's hard for me to tell you exactly what, just because I don't want to give anything away about the show.
Sure.
Mine ended up in a mentalism act with a stuffed elephant that just sort of tied into the next act.
Okay.
I don't want to give it away. That's the problem.
Sure,
so,
sure.
Yeah, and I'm probably going to be doing that in this show as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to tie it in, you know, and then I'm going to be doing a huge prediction stunt, which is going to be a really big death-defying stunt.
Okay. Something that would take up most of the stage and the audience can see easily
kind
of a thing.
Yeah.
Well, I like that idea.
I mean, usually it's just me and the audience
when
I perform mentalism. In this case, it's going to be big.
So you really didn't have like an MC that was for the Magic Jam, just like I know under a Believe show with Chris, that he doesn't have, quote, an MC because it's pretty much all him, and one thing kind of leads to the next. And they're really more musical transitions, as I recall. He has a musical, he has video,
it's a mixture of different types of transitions. And,
and
the Magic Jam was great at that. That was one of the things, you know, we got really good reviews on Magic Jam from any reporter that came to the show. And one of the things they all talked about was also the transitions. It wasn't your typical tight transition. It was something that surprisingly led into the next act.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you go because I know we've got some other things here to do today, but what kind of things are you working on? You were telling me before about the psychokinetic touches.
Working on a book on pocket writing that's already written. It's just got to be reformatted and put together. Hoping to have that out before Christmas. Psychokinetic touches has been an ongoing...
I know we've talked about that.
I don't want to call it a bane, but it's...
Well, there have been so many great ideas and touches on the touches by so many people.
Well, pun intended, And the hard thing for me is... I know I've got everything for the book, but it's like, how do you format this? Do I talk about all the subtleties and then bring them together in routines? Mm-hmm. Do I show routines and put the subtleties in there? It's not an easy book to write.
That's true.
I mean, it really isn't an easy book to write. Do you talk about the history of it up front? Do you talk about the history of it at the back end of the book? It's just not an easy book to write.
Yeah, and then it'll be supplemented with a video.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We talked about having that tipped in the book, you know, then as well. So
that's
going to be great. Well, good. Thanks very much.
No, thank you, my friend.
It's always good to kind of catch up. I know that I frequently will get comments or an email saying, "Hey, more Banachek, you know, let us know what he's
cool.
doing."
Well,
you
thank
know,
you. So. I thank everybody who says that. You know, yeah. all three of you.
Yeah,
you make it seem like a crowd. Just keep doing it.
Three out of four of my listeners.
Yeah,
so
hey,
that sounds.
Wait
great.
A minute, that's 3/4 of your crowd. It's not bad.
It's not bad. 75%. So thanks again.
It's kind of like when people introduce you. And they say, you know, yeah, what are the top 5 mentalists in the world? It's like, wait, who's the other 4?
Yeah. It's like, really?
Who are the others?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good and bad. That's good. All right, thanks very much.
All right, take care, my friend.
Okay, that's Banachek for the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty out.
So, it sounds like there will be more to come for the Supernaturalist Tour, and I hope to provide you with more details as they are announced, and even perhaps a chat with some of the other performers from the tour if the opportunity presents itself. Thank you for listening and supporting the Magic Word. I'm glad to have given you a little more from Banachek, as you have asked. Many of you know that Banachek and I have been business partners and close buddies since 1987. It has been a great relationship that has afforded us many opportunities. If you are looking to complete your library with any of Banachek's books, DVDs, or CDs, or you're looking for a prop he has invented, then be sure to visit our website at magicinspirations.net. We have maintained the .net domain so as to keep it away from the casual surfer looking for a .com address. Be sure to like the Magic Word Podcast on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Magic Word Pod and Instagram at Scott Wells Magic. But however you care to follow us, I sincerely appreciate you spreading the word. So until next time, this is Scotty out.